the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
Hello, and thanks for listening to another episode of Lifetime Income. I am Paul Horn, and on our show today, we're going to be talking about some common misconceptions about retirement.
And I'm Chris Prytower. There are several misconceptions that can prevent a baby boomer or Gen Xer from making the right decisions when it comes to retirement planning. One common example is that people think they can never save enough to be able to retire.
Unfortunately, Chris, this is one that I've consistently heard since I began my career as a financial planner. There's really two common forms that I hear of this. The first one is, I will start saving for college after my kids' college is paid for. And the other one is, I will start saving when I make enough. To quote my favorite Star Wars character of all time, Yoda, do or do not, there is no try. And the reason I'm bringing this quote up is this. Most of the time, the hardest part is dealing with inertia. It's moving from nothing into something. But once they really start moving and making the conscious decision to honestly look at their finances, and they really often do discover that there are ways that they can cut expenses and increase their savings on a monthly basis. The thing that people have to remember is this. Building wealth is not a sprint. It's a marathon. It is done through consistency over a long period of a time. It's just like when you run a marathon. It's done one step at a time, 1 mile at a time. Building wealth is done with the same consistent discipline.
I think that's a good point, Paul, because really, if people truly understood the impact of compound interest, I really feel they'd be much more prone to save.
I'd agree. You know, just someone that saves $5,000 a year over the next 40 years could reasonably expect that to grow to be about $800,000 at retirement. Now, that would be $600,000 in growth over that time. They would have contributed $200,000, which is simply the $5,000 times 40 years. Now, think of a millennial doing this in a Roth IRA over their career. All that growth would come tax-free for retirement.
And one of the best ways to save for retirement is to use automated investing. The most common form of this is seen in 401ks as people save a portion of each paycheck. Now, are there any misconceptions that we can talk about, Paul, surrounding 401ks?
There's not really a misconception about a 401k per se, but rather I think it's a misconception that people have that they should only save in tax-deferred accounts for retirement. Realistically, what most people do is save 10% or less from their paychecks into a 401k, have their employer match, and they assume this is going to be enough for a retirement nest egg. Unfortunately, and often the case from what I've seen, a 401k alone is not enough for retirement savings. Another challenge with this approach is you can be creating a potential headache in retirement. I have retired clients with over 3/4 of their assets in tax-deferred accounts. While this sounds great, what this actually does is trigger higher taxes for them in retirement, as when they begin to take that money out of the account to live on, it's going to be taxed as ordinary income. Ideally, you would like to have some form of tax diversification, saving money in different buckets, whether it's tax-deferred, Roth, and taxable accounts. If this is not the case, and most of the money is in a traditional tax-deferred account, a Roth conversion can be an important consideration in those cases.
So it sounds like you're an advocate of a multi-pronged approach to saving for retirement. Would that be a fair assessment?
Chris, that would absolutely be correct. If all of a person's assets, like I said, are tax deferred, all they're really doing is kicking the can down the road and creating more tax headache for them in retirement. And that really makes it, from a planning perspective, more difficult to plan for retirement. If you have different buckets of money, that allows for greater variety and makes cash flow planning retirement more beneficial. Just think of it from this perspective. The spread between the ordinary income tax rates, with the highest bracket being 37% currently, and long-term capital gains and dividends rates for the same person would be 20%. That spread of 17% is among the highest that we've ever seen. So it can be very beneficial to do savings in multiple buckets, because what this will do is this will lower your potential taxes in retirement, which will actually make it much easier for you to have the ability to retire as less of your money is going towards taxes.
Okay, so while having higher taxes in retirement is not ideal, Isn't it still better since most people would be in a lower tax bracket in retirement?
Unfortunately, that is another false perception that people have about retirement. They automatically assume that they're going to be in a lower tax bracket in retirement. This is the case for many. However, this isn't the case for all, especially if there's pensions and Social Security involved for income sources. By having that diversification in tax planning in retirement, it just makes it so much easier and helps lower taxes along the way. Just imagine someone needs $40,000 per year to live off for their investments, which is around the average that I've seen. If all that is, again, in a tax-deferred account, all that's taxed as ordinary income. Now, if a portion of that is coming from dividends or in a Roth account, again, that just lowers the taxes that you have to pay, making it much easier to create the income that you need in retirement. By not having all the money in tax-deferred accounts, we're also able to avoid the dreaded RMD trap.
Now, for our listeners, Paul, can you explain what the RMD trap is that you are referring to?
Yeah, just as a quick reminder, RMD stands for Required Minimum Distributions. These are the amount of money the IRS will require you to start taking out of your IRAs or 401ks in the year that you turn 70 and a half. What I've seen for many people that have large holdings in these tax-deferred accounts is it triggers unnecessary taxes as it forces them to take out more money oftentimes than what they actually need to live off of in retirement.
So if people are concerned about saving for retirement, can't they just choose to work as long as they want?
For many individuals, especially business owners, this can be an option to choose. However, it's really dangerous if this is your retirement plan. Just as a quick example, I had one client who made this assumption that he would be able to work forever as an attorney. And as a result, he lived a rather extravagant lifestyle going into his early 70s. Unfortunately, he did have a heart attack, and per the doctor's orders and his wife's request, he was forced into retirement. What this did is, since they didn't properly plan for retirement, he was forced to make some hard changes like selling expensive cars and downsizing this home. The reality is life happens, and it's dangerous for your financial plan to be just work forever.
Well, that's good advice, Paul. And another possible complication would be if a person's laid off or forced to retire sooner than they'd like. Are there any assumptions that are faulty that people make when they become retired?
I think one of the most common ones that I see people make is they assume retirement to be sort of a finish line. And realistically, they view their life no longer having meaning or purpose once they've retired. This is really not the case. I think one of the biggest faulty assumptions that I see people make is they assume that retirement is a sort of a finish line. And many of the times with this finish line viewpoint, they view their life as no longer having purpose or meaning. This is a very common challenge that I deal with most people, as they're just not mentally prepared for retirement. So much of who we are as individuals, especially males, our view of ourselves and our self-worth is tied to our occupations. Imagine any party you go to, or when you meet a stranger for the first time, one of the most common questions you get asked is, what do you do for a living? A lot of these people that are retired may be afraid to answer, I'm retired, since they view this with a negative stigma. It's okay to feel lost or concerned about retiring, but like anything else in life, it's how you handle the change. Retirement shouldn't be thought of as a finish line, but rather a transition. You're starting a new chapter, you're not ending a book. Retirement really gives you the opportunity to pursue your dreams or passions. For me personally, this may mean trying to join the senior PGA Tour.
I really like that, Paul, starting a new chapter and not ending a book. Now, if our listeners want to dive into this topic about dealing with the stress of retiring and being mentally prepared, I do recommend that our listeners listen to the podcast with Dr. Fishkin that aired September 4th. Now, Paul, what are some misconceptions people have about investing for retirement?
Well, we all know as you get closer to retirement, you want to become more conservative by reducing risk and change your investments from being focused on growth to really being focused on income and preservation. There's a simple rule of thumb that's still unfortunately being used by a lot of advisors out there. It says whatever 100 minus your age is, that's the percentage amount that you should have in stocks. So if you're retiring at 65, that rule says you should have 35% of your assets in stocks. like most rules of thumbs, this is oftentimes very misleading, as it doesn't account for your risk tolerance or your objectives. In the current environment we're in, with low yields and rising interest rates, it does make sense still to have some exposure to stocks, especially dividend-paying ones for retirees. Having some stock exposure provides for growth potential, as well as helps make sure that the portfolio income can keep pace with inflation.
Paul, are there any other common misconceptions that you'd like to bring up during this program?
There really is one other misconception I'd like to mention. The finance industry has done a great job of creating confusion for the public, making it really difficult for them to understand the importance of using a fiduciary. Only fiduciaries are legally required to act in your best interests. While this may seem like it's common sense, unfortunately, most advisors aren't held to this standard. So it really is important to ask any potential advisor that you work with if they are a fiduciary. And if the answer is anything other than an unequivocal yes, you should probably just walk away.
You know, it's just so interesting that not all advisors are required to be fiduciaries. Now, does this impact the quality of advice a client receives?
Not necessarily. And just because someone isn't a fiduciary doesn't mean they're not a good advisor or planner. But again, it's a good starting point because obviously it's great to have people acting in your best interest at all times. There is no magic bullet, but having a credential could be another way for an advisor to show that they've got the ability to provide sound advice. Having that credential shows that they've done some form of specialized training.
Well, you mentioned it's a good starting point, but what other credentials should people be looking for?
Oh, wow. When you talk about credentials, there's everything under the sun. I'm sure at some point you've come across a professional in the finance industry that has an alphabet soup behind their name. There's many, many wonderful credentials out there. But for retirees or those planning for retirement, you should really focus on the big three. A CFP, which is Certified Financial Planner, CPA, Certified Public Account, or a CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst. These three are the most widely recognized ones, and they're also the most difficult to obtain. Other credentials can be great for niches, but as a starting point, hopefully the advisor has one of those three credentials.
And of course, it's also great to use broker check as well to make sure the potential advisor has a clean history. These really have been some great tips, Paul. And the hard part, as I think about it, is that sometimes we just don't know what we don't know. And that, of course, can lead to these misconceptions.
It really is difficult to know what you don't know. It's oftentimes very overwhelming trying to manage finances and make sure you're getting all of this correct. The important thing is for our listeners is that keep doing what you're doing. Keep listening to shows like ours and use other media forms out there to become well-informed. And remember, just like running a marathon or trying to lose weight, it just comes down to having a plan, being intentional and disciplined over a long term, and seeking out professionals as needed.
Well, Paul, it's time for our real-life case study, a hypothetical illustration based on real-life examples. And as always, we've changed the names and circumstances to protect privacy. We do have slides online at financialsense.com, and they illustrate the points that are being made here today.
For this lifetime case study this week, we're going to be talking about our friend Henry Brown, and the title is Mind Over Matter, Common Misconceptions About Retirement. So who is Henry? Henry's age 63, he's a long-standing attorney who's achieved much success, but he has found the job to become more difficult in recent years, but he does overall enjoy what he still does. Most of his friends have already retired, and the stress and long hours of his career are beginning to take their toll on him as well. Henry knows that he wants to retire, but he's really unsure of what he's going to do next. I mean, his whole who he is has been wrapped up in being an attorney, and he's just not sure what he wants to do once he retires. He's kind of seeing retirement, in a sense, an end of his life, so to speak, because it's the end of his professional life, which, again, is for him was such a strong identifier as to who he was. So Henry has done a great job saving for retirement and really isn't too concerned about running out of money. He does consider himself to be a moderate investor, but given his proximity retirement, his current advisor that he's working with has him allocated mostly in bonds and bond funds, really just trying to protect capital. Taxes have always been a concern of his, and going into retirement, he thinks that they still will be a concern. The concerns for Henry planning for retirement is really knowing how he wants to spend his retirement. So again, identifying who is Henry once he's retired. Putting together a retirement plan, as he's never done this before. What he does know is he is trying to reduce taxes, and he wants to maintain the same lifestyle when he is retired. Looking at his current portfolio being managed, his risk score came back as a 50. So that'd be a moderate level of risk. And as we'd mentioned earlier, his current advisor does have him positioned conservatively, resulting in a risk score of about 30. When we look at Henry's current budget, he has total income of $110,000. Expenses are only $74,000 a year, so leaves him with a nice surplus of $36,000 per year. When he retires, his expenses are expected to be about the same. In fact, he thinks they're actually going to go up a little bit when he starts traveling more. So plan for expenses of $85,000 a year. Looking at his net worth, total is $1.7 million. And out of that $1.7 million, $700,000 is real estate. So that leaves him about $1.1 million in his portfolio after we account for his mortgage. Looking at his allocation, 80% of his asset allocation is into bonds, with 15% into cash and just a small portion in stocks. So looking at Henry's retirement, one of the questions we always have to answer is, how is he going to meet his income objectives? So for him, he does have a small pension defined benefit plan from his employer, which will be about $29,000 a year. He'll get $34,000 a year from Social Security, and his portfolio will produce about another $32,000 a year in income. Again, we had mentioned his expenses are about $85,000 a year. His total income from these three sources will be $95,000. So he should have a surplus of over $10,000 per year. Let's talk about some of the common misconceptions about retirement that Henry is currently working with. He does believe that you have to save all your money into a retirement account, as most of his money is saved in his 401k. He thinks there's this magic number out there, this magical number that he has to reach before he's able to retire adequately. His current advisor has coached him that he doesn't need to have any sort of stock exposure throughout retirement. And again, as we've talked about, he's just not mentally prepared for retirement. He views retirement kind of an end of his life, so to speak. So looking at the goal-based recommendations for Henry, first thing we want to do is help him prepare for retirement. So we wanted to ease this transition to retirement so he's more mentally prepared. To do so was to help educate him on opportunities, things that he can do. One of the things that he hadn't considered was doing some pro bono work. So we talked with him about doing that so he can still be that attorney, but do it in a way that still providing benefit to individuals and charities, but in a way that's going to be less stressful for him. And before he fully retires, we had recommended that he work part-time and really fully retire when he's ready. Looking at trying to reduce taxes, as that was one of his big concerns, we talked about doing some Roth conversions to help minimize future tax implications. And then the second recommendation about taxes was to provide some tax diversification. After his current living expenses, he has about $36,000 a year in net income and surplus. So what we had recommend is that he do some monthly savings into a taxable account to help better diversify. The last thing we looked at was trying to update his current asset allocation, not necessarily looking to try and increase risk, but over time using what's called a rising equity glide path. So when it makes sense and there's a better entry point into the stock market at that time, looking to maybe reduce some of the cash and bond holdings into some dividend paying stocks. But for the meantime, want to make sure that he stays defensive based on market conditions, and as we mentioned, try and increase stock exposure after the next market downturn. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of Lifetime Income. It's been a pleasure, and enjoy the rest of your week.
The The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.